What does the advent of the cloud, as in where we store data, mean for future flea marketers and dumpster divers? Will the discovery of an old hard drive filled with thousands of unedited stashes of digital photos have the same impact and mystery as the discovery of an actual physical crumbling photo album? Well, Paul Lucas probably spends time thinking about questions like this. He's best known for his blog UniWatch, which is actually about sports uniforms. He started a blog and wrote a series of articles for Slate, though, about a stash of old report cards that he found in an abandoned New York City public school. And he joins me now to talk about the stories contained in those documents and to maybe hear some of your stories about historical artifacts that you've stumbled upon. Paul Lucas, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here. And let me just clarify, I found the cards not in an abandoned school, but I found a file cabinet that was being discarded, and it was being thrown out in a public school, and so that's where I salvaged the cards.
Okay, sorry for the error. So tell us about the report cards. They're from the Manhattan Trade School for Girls. What was that?
That was actually a really pioneering enterprise. It was founded in 1902 by a bunch of wealthy reformers, and it had backers with names that are very familiar in New York City history, names like Macy and Vanderbilt and Guggenheim. All these people contributed to the founding of this school. It was the first girls' trade school in New York City and in the nation, and it trained girls mostly in the needle trades, which would be dressmaking and millinery and things like that. And these were mainly girls from impoverished immigrant families. They couldn't go to high school because they had to join the labor force to help support their families. But the idea was if they took a 1 or 2 year training course at this school, they could earn a higher wage. And it was sort of a middle ground between going to high school and just dropping out after eighth grade. And it was fascinating, fascinating school.
I said before these were report cards from the 30s. I'm seeing now that they're from the 20s and 30s.
Even earlier. The earliest ones I have are from, I guess we would say, the aughts, the 19-aughts.
So wow.
I've got one from 1902. Most are from the late teens through the early 30s.
So what did they grade them in, and how did they grade them?
Well, they had to choose a trade to specialize in, whether it was dressmaking or millinery or sewing machine operation. So they were graded first and foremost in that. But then they were also taught all the other things that children learn after eighth grade, like arithmetic and English. And they were also told a lot about how to survive in the labor marketplace, everything from personal presentation to what we would now think of as home economics, how to dress, how to put together a neat and efficient appearance. It was, in some ways, it was almost like a finishing school for girls who were going to be entering the labor marketplace.
So what do you learn about these women's lives through their grades on, you know, how well they use a sewing machine and things like that?
Well, the most fascinating thing about the school was that they would not give a diploma until the student had demonstrated proficiency in their trade. And the school actually had a job placement office, essentially an in-house employment bureau, that would find jobs for the girls. And all of the reports on how the girls performed on the job and their reports back on the conditions of the workplace, all of that was recorded in these cards. So the cards actually have more to do, or at least as much to do, with the girls' post-scholastic work endeavors as they do with the grades they got in school. And what I did, what I decided to do for this project, which I call Permanent Record, I tried to find some of the families of these girls. I have not found a living student. Most of them are now deceased. They'd be well over 100. Huh. But I have found the families for several of them, and that was a very powerful experience to call people up and say, "Hi, you don't know me, but I have your mother's report card from 1929. Would you like to see it?"
Yeah, I guess so. You found examples of racism and anti-Semitism that would be outrageous today, right?
Yeah, sometimes coming from the school's staff, in fact. There are notations about when a parent would come in and have to talk to the school staff about their child. And there's one from a Jewish student, and her father came in, and there's a notation in the card saying, "So-and-so's father came in, typical overfed Jewish silk salesman with no taciturnity, which was quite a comment. I was not familiar with the stereotype of the overfed Jewish silk salesman, I must say, and I'd never heard the word taciturnity, but that's the kind of sort of casual ethnic stereotyping that was just thrown about freely at that time. But it should be said, the school was open to all races, all ethnicities. There was a small percentage of black students, and they looked out for the black students. One of the really powerful things about the cards is that all of the black students have a small black adhesive dot on the front of their report card. So it is literally, like the cliche, literally a black mark on their records. And I initially thought this was some sort of stigma. In fact, I sort of decoded it as a bit of a warning system to be careful when placing these students with employers who might be biased or prejudiced. And there were examples of that in the files as well.
Paul Lucas from Slate.com talking about this treasure trove of old report cards that he found from the Manhattan Trade School for Girls, dating mostly to the 1920s and 30s, and even, as he said, all the way back to the O's. And Serena in Brooklyn may have a living relative who attended. Serena, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Hi there. You can hear me?
Sure can.
Yes, my mother told me that she went to this Manhattan Trade School. She did learn needlework. She said they used to put smocking and fancy needlework on children's clothes and then sell them to wealthy clients. She went there right up until I think she was 17, and she dropped out because she's 96 now. It was in the height of the Depression, and she said she had to go out and work and help her family. She went into the clothing trade. She was a presser for cleaners, for the cleaners for years, worked for the government during the wartime. But she told me about going to this school.
Serena,
she's now in a nursing home with Alzheimer's disease, but I remember her always telling me about the school she went to for trades.
Serena, if you could tell me your mother's name, I can see if she's in my collection, if she's represented in my collection of report cards. I've got almost 400 of them.
Her name is M-A-E May Days, D-A-I-S-E.
Was that her maiden name?
That was her maiden name. She was a schoolgirl.
D-A-I-S-E. Are you looking that up right now in real time?
Unfortunately, she is not in my database. I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
But great story. And, you know, filling in a little more of the history. Mario in Middletown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mario.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have about a half a dozen documents from the overseer of the poor from Newark, New Jersey. They appear to be child support cases. And they use language like bastardy in there, and there's one document that actually says the investigator met with the father, who was a baker, and he's a good sport but does not pay his child support.
So another kind of document that you came up with. And how did that affect your understanding of the past?
Well, it seems that some of the language in the document seems that there might have been some favoritism for friends and things like that.
Favoritism for friends from the court?
Well,
I'm shocked. Shocked.
It seems like, some of the people investigated might have been local business owners and, they might have got some preferential treatment. It says they were just, spoken to and released
right.
And things like that.
From the late 1800s. Thank you very much. Let me go right on to Fran in Howard Beach. Fran, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm a first-time caller, but I just wanted to tell you, maybe some things are better left unsaid. My children found my third grade report card, and I'm 60 years old. They're quite successful, but I'm all right. I do all right for myself. But maybe, this is a good part of history. But some things maybe you just better throw back.
You didn't do so well in third grade?
No, not, and they didn't write such nice things about me.
That's pretty funny.
But I've turned out, I'm a great healthcare worker, and I care a lot about people. So I don't know what they were thinking that back then.
You sound like you can't. Fran, thank you very much. Yeah, how about that, Paul? Some things are best left uncovered.
Well, privacy issues were something I thought quite a bit about when pursuing this project. I did get some legal advice to make sure that I was on safe legal ground in terms of publishing this material. And aside from the legal aspect of it, I just thought about what was ethical and what was right. I spoke, frankly with families I contacted, and I said, you know, if there's something negative about your relative here, how do you feel about that? For the most part, everyone was very forthright and had no problem with that kind of thing. But it is something that I thought a lot about. And I think that when we see these documents from the past, whether it's old real estate records or report cards or whatever, there is that sense of voyeurism, that we're getting a peek into somebody else's life and that there's a little tingle of excitement that comes with that. And one reason I really wanted to pursue this and find these students' families was that I didn't want them just to be ciphers. These students to be ciphers, to be names on a page, and to be notes that were written on a report card. I wanted to flesh them out as real people. And so that's what I was trying to do in terms of finding their families. And certainly one thing you do find is that an assessment that a teacher writes about a 14-year-old is not destiny.
Share some comments from your own report cards in your story.
Yeah,
like Paul continues.
I don't actually have my report cards anymore, but I remember a few choice words that.
Yes, well, we clipped this quote. Paul continues to be a fine student, but he needs to learn to control his talking as it sometimes disturbs others.
Yeah, I remember Mrs. Smith writing that very clearly on my first grade report card, and it turned out to be somewhat prophetic.
Yeah, I think you've been disturbing others with your talking here today, but you're going to continue to do so for another 4 minutes. Ken in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. My grandmother died in 1990. She was in her late 80s, and I found recently three typewritten notes on very beautiful writing paper from her high school in Brooklyn, her all-girls high school, each chastising her for not attending school, for being late, for being careless about her schoolwork. And for generally being wild. And two of them were written by the president of the school, the principal of the school, and the third was the most interesting. It was written by the president of the student body. This was my grandmother's second appearance in front of the student body. Far from it being, my grandmother being exactly the same in high school as she was when she was 80, the notes were typed so beautifully, and the paper was such fine quality of paper, a little small note paper, and also the grammar that the president of the student body, who must have been 15 or 16, was perfect, vastly superior to anything I ever came across when I worked for the federal government.
That's really something. Ken, I have to leave it there because we're going to run out of time. But, you're right about, she talks about her. He talks about his grandmother's troubles. You write about one troublemaker whose report card you found, quote-unquote troublemaker, right?
Yeah, that was Lucille Fasanella. She was cited for everything from chewing gum, that was actually written on her report card, to kind of complaining about the wage she was making in a job that the school found for her. She wrote a letter complaining about it, which was seen as sort of an uppity move by the school staff. And when I did find her family, they were incredibly amused by that assessment that she was a troublemaker or had been branded a troublemaker. They said, yep, that was her, and they got a kick out of that.
That's pretty funny. And Annette in Queens, we just have like 20 seconds for you, but you think your mom went to a similar kind of trade school for girls?
Yeah, she went to Manhattan Trade, and she studied millinery, and she came from the Lower East Side. And she died about 10 years ago. Yeah. She was 94. Her name was Ida Levine.
Let me check. L-E-V-I-N-E?
Correct.
I'm afraid not. Sorry.
Annette, thank you. We have a minute left. What do you think future generations will find of us? And will it be intriguing, or will all the bits of digital details about our lives be too overwhelming?
That's a really good question, and I've thought a lot about that. One thing I've learned is that today's report cards, because I don't have kids myself, so I'm not in touch with the current report card scene, that they're usually electronic or often electronic.
Yeah, they get paper, too. At least my kids have in the city.
One thing you hear about, if somebody found your iPod, 50 years from now, would there even be technology around in 50 years that can play it? Because the technology changes, the compatibility
really
of devices
true.
Changes.
That's a good point. So will history be lost because we go from disks to chips to whatever comes next?
Exactly.
All right, your other life, blogging Uniwatch about sports uniforms. the new Brooklyn basketball team, the Brooklyn Nets. Can they design the logo for the shirt so people won't think they're the Brooklyn Nets?
That will be the challenge. I'm frankly surprised that they stuck with the name Nets. They had that big drum roll announcement yesterday. It was kind of anticlimactic to hear that it was just going to be the Nets. But
after that contest generated so many creative ideas.
They said they're going to have a new color scheme. They haven't announced what it's going to be yet, but the team will have a new set of team colors.
Paul Lucas, great conversation. Thank you. Didn't disturb anybody.
Thanks, Brian.
And that's it for this Thanksgiving edition of The Brian Lehrer Show.